You're listening to Face Off, episode 116, recorded April 11th, 2011. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm your other host, Mark Sanborn.
In this podcast, we talk about web technology such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can get the show notes for this episode by going to faceoffshow.com. You know what? I am still sick.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still sick. Huh? I'm getting there. This is one heck of a cold. I mean, it's seriously, it's like a 2 to 3 weeker. Like, my wife is just now getting over it. She's like still coughing a little bit, but for the most part, she's over it, and she's had it like 2.5, 3 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, so let's go in. So the first thing I want to talk about, this it proves that even more I am so screwed when it comes to colds and stuff. I got a new job this week. So I was really sad to leave my old job, but I got a new job working for a boss that I worked for years ago. Now I'm the student lab supervisor. I work for like the student computer labs where they do, you know, like computer labs for students to use and stuff. And pretty excited about that, but it's more relevant when we get into our geek tool we'll talk about there. But I'm always excited. New opportunities are fun, you know. I mean, like I find I'm very loyal. I don't like to leave jobs a lot. I'm not a job surfer at all. But a new job always is pretty exciting.
Are we gonna get some experience out of you, some new programming stuff or some?
Yeah, there's gonna be some new programming. There's gonna be some new desktop administration, because this job is primarily desktop administration, like 300 to 400 desktop computers, Macs, nice, and PCs and stuff. So I hope to get
use
a lot of
like Puppet stuff or some kind of a config deal, or
well, most of them are new Windows. Tools. Most of them are Windows, so we use Active Directory. So
nice.
Yeah, it'll be fun. But that's exciting, new things. And speaking of new things, you actually shot some Skeet this weekend.
Yeah, so, you know, Skeet is that game you see where they, you know, throw all these orange targets all over the place and you shoot at them.
For most people, it's the third game in Super Mario Brothers. You've got,
actually, I think that's Trap.
Single, yeah. No. No.
Singles and doubles?
Maybe. I don't know.
So,
whatever.
I guess for those of you at home that don't know much about shooting and Skeet and stuff, Trap is where they kind of just go out straight or to the left or to the right away from you and you shoot at them. Skeet is kind of, you shoot in a semicircle, and so some of the shots are coming towards you, mm-hmm, some are away from you, and some are kind of perpendicular.
Some are really but anyway, high it's angle, just, some are pretty low angle and stuff. It's super fun.
Yeah, it's super fun, and so what I did, I've been doing it for a couple of weeks. It's a, you know, what I really like about it is we can go out on a Wednesday night because they'll put these big lights out. And the other thing I like about it is I can do it with my dad and brother. So that, you know, it's something that some people with differing ages can go out and have fun and play. And so it's always good to do that, get together with the family. And so what we did this weekend is we went and shot registered Skeet. So after a while, we've been practicing, and registered is kind of like going to a golf tournament or something. You bear down, really try hard. And so I shot that, and it was really fun.
Did you just call your dad old?
I probably did. But I'm getting old too, so.
Yeah, exactly. You know, one cool thing about sort of Skeet and even you know, or especially like golfing, I realize why a lot of older people like golfing and stuff, is it's a sport you can take seriously, but it's not too hard on your body. You know, true, like I wouldn't risk going out and playing like a real full on game of football right now.
Yeah, good point.
You know, I got too much invested in my knees for that. So, but you know, like Skeet and golf and stuff, those are great sports that, like you said, all ages, and it's always interesting. So cool. How'd you do?
I shot a 77 out of 100, which is considered not too good. But for me, it was great because I shot one of the best games I've ever done score-wise. It was 22 out of 25. And I'm improving. So, and it's my first time. We've only been doing it since February, I think.
Nice. Yeah, that's so, about, I mean, we went with you a couple
late
times
January, maybe.
Rob and I went out with you a couple times, and all of a sudden, your family just kept going and going and going. You guys are hardcore.
Yeah, well, my dad worked at a gun club for a while, and so he really wanted to get back into it. And so it was kind of a, you know, we'd go on Wednesday nights. It's kind of like a bowling league or something. You know, it's just something you go and do during the week, and it's I really enjoy it. It's good. Good
like
fun.
A bowling league. That's excellent. All right, so let's move on to some real web technology news and follow-ups. One thing we found out, or no, actually we have one more before we get into the actual news and follow-ups. We actually were told by our friend Tig Valor, who listens to the show, one thing he had heard is that the blue light, we talked about your blue light in your new Subaru, how it does a really good job of illuminating yet not distracting the driver. One thing he read is that some truckers and stuff, they've been doing some experiments with blue lights because it helps with alertness. So that might be a subliminal reason they put it in there as well, because not only does it illuminate well, but it might keep you awake when you're driving down the road.
That also explains the Flux app that dims your monitors to get rid of that blue you know, hue to your monitors. So that makes sense.
I'm using it right now. I'm getting tired. Tell you what, this
I'm glad. I'm glad my car, you know, a Subaru, being an awesome car that it is, has this blue special light to help me keep, you know, keep me safe and alert.
There you go. I want you safe and alert too, Mark. I'm happy about that. Okay, so the only piece of real web technology news that we have is our buddy Rob Lund found out that Speller.us, which was an old web app we had talked about for checking your website for spelling, has changed their name to CheckDog.com. Still does the basic same thing, though. It'll go through your website and look for spelling mistakes, grammar sort of suggestions, and tell you about them. So go to CheckDog.com if you want to see that. Hey, let's talk about our first sponsor, which is our favorite little productivity web app called AgileTask. AgileTask is a personal backlog tool that is task management, dead simple, things like tags for organization, achievements to keep them fun. AgileTask is a great little web app, and it's been fun doing it, don't you think?
Yeah, it's been great, and I've been using it for a year now.
Yeah, me too. We got our... Well, I guess that kind of gives it away. If you're an AgileTask member for a year, you may or may not get an achievement. So I got that today. You got it today, too. So check it out. You know, especially with my new job, it's been pretty helpful. My old job, I kind of stopped using it. But my new one, because I'm part of a management team, I manage like 20-plus student employees now. There's a lot of random stuff going on. So I've been using it pretty heavily to keep track of all my stuff.
Very excellent. Helpful.
And since I have tags, it's super easy to keep track of my home versus work stuff because I have a hashtag home and then a hashtag ITC, which is where I work now. So,
and you can now schedule tasks. So if you have
absolutely
stuff you want to be reminded about in the future or future tasks you need to do, you can stick them in there.
Absolutely. Try it out. You get a free 30 days, and the development team is probably the coolest group of developers I've ever seen in my entire life, and they're very responsive and love to talk to people. So check it out, agiletask.me. Let's get into our geek tool of the week. So as I mentioned earlier, I got a new job, and I was really sad to go away from my old job. I really liked my coworkers, really cool people. Really great boss, all that stuff. So last Friday, we had a going away party. Not this Friday, a week from Friday. They had a going away party for me, which was really cool. And that's where I got our Geek Tool of the Week for a going away present. And this blew my mind. Did not expect this at all. I didn't know how to react to it. They actually bought me an iPad 2. So our Geek Tool of the Week is the iPad 2. And I wanted to talk about it because this is one of those things where, you know, I've had tablet PCs. For a long time, the sort of convertible Windows tablet PCs for taking notes. Primarily, I mean, that was really the focus, was taking notes. And the iPad 2 is a similar form factor, but, you know, totally tablet. And first of all, I have to say, the hardware is fantastic. I haven't handled many regular iPads, but I've been looking at pictures and stuff, and this the 2 is definitely thinner, and I like it. It's really thin, very robust. It's got two cameras, which I haven't really found a use for yet. I know you can use FaceTime to do face chatting if you want and stuff, but I don't really know anyone that uses FaceTime, and it's been pretty useless for me. The back camera, I think, is super useless. I don't even know why they have it on there, but the form factor is fantastic. It's got the full glass front. And the thing about it, I found there is one app in particular I want to talk about called Flipboard, which this is a web app I had been sort of contemplating making or been looking for very hard for a long time. What Flipboard does is it takes all these different sources, like your Google Reader sources, your Twitter links, or your Facebook links, and turns them into sort of an interactive magazine. So, you know, you put all your stuff in and you go, and so like, let's say, you know, I pick Twitter here. I'm looking at my Twitter stuff. I mean, this looks just like a magazine layout, and it's so fantastic. I love that it just aggregates all that stuff. It's not like Google Reader where you go and click each one is read. It's just a nice, you know, familiar interface for dynamic data, which I love. I mean, it's a fantastic interface. Really cool. Love that app. You know, the thing is, what you find with Apple is, my goodness, are they good at making hardware. I think every, you know, I also at work, I inherited an old MacBook Pro, but it's an all aluminum body one. I mean, like, you just realize their hardware is just so fantastic. It's so well thought out. Like, this piece is just, it's amazing. It's a great little piece of hardware. The one thing I have found, though, is, and the truth is, you know, I have an old first gen iPod Touch, so I hadn't really had a chance to play with the new iOS features and stuff. The more I get into it, I mean, I really don't think I like iOS a ton. I think I'm an Android guy, and I don't know if that's because I got Android first and I'm biased, but, you know, in general, like, I like the idea. I'd like to have a tablet with widgets, and I would like to have a tablet. Like, there is no Google integration on here, and I mean, it sounds silly, but, like, I don't like the Mail app. I don't like the Apple Mail app. I want my Gmail app. I want my app to recognize my priority inbox. You know, I've invested a lot in multiple inbox, priority inbox with Gmail, you know, and I like, on my Android phone, I only get notified of priority email and stuff, you know. And there's really almost, you know, there's very little Google stuff on here. There's Google Maps, I think, but I think Apple does that and sort of uses the Maps API. It's, you know, I do like that Google integration. There's a lot of really nice apps for iOS. You know, it's a very popular platform, so there are cool apps for it. But what you find is, also with that, there aren't as many apps. And sometimes people say, like, that's a bad thing about Android, but I like that there are apps for obscure services. You know, like, ping.fm is not a very popular service, but there's like three or four apps on the Android you can use for ping.fm, and I can't, there's nothing here except for, I think, Seismic or something that uses, and Seismic, here's another thing, there's tons of iOS apps, but they're not all iPad apps, and so you can run them, but they don't look super great.
It's a good point.
But, I, you know, the funny thing is, we've talked about, you know, I guess privately a lot, like, the tablet form factor and whether or not we like it. And, you know, it's a pretty great form factor. It's not really good at doing anything productive. I'm thinking I might try and get, like, a ZagMate or something so I can get a keyboard with it, and I think that'll help. Because typing on it is very rough. Like, in landscape, it's kind of uncomfortable because unless you have, like, a case to tip it up, like, it's very uncomfortable to type landscape. And in portrait mode, my thumbs just aren't big enough to comfortably type across all the letters. So I think a keyboard might help with that. But as far as reading data and playing games, it hands down, it's an awesome system. But again, the games are sort of very focused, right? They're very tablet touchy games, which a lot of people like. I'm not as much.
Yeah, the little bit that I did play with it, it felt like it was a really good consuming device for casual surfing, like Reddit or, you know, Hacker News or something. But not so much for if you're gonna, you want to type in a lot of URLs and open a lot of tabs up. I felt the multitasking was not as strong in that, as, or maybe I would just, you know, I didn't pick it up as fast as I did in Android,
right,
just
that's the
back
other
button.
Thing. Like, I don't know. Yeah, exactly. Like, I maybe, you know, again, I might be biased. I got used to the back button in Android. I like that on any app, I have just a quick way to go back and back. And in here with iOS, like, sometimes I really am confused at how to get back without just going home and relaunching the app. Like, there's a couple where they launch, like, the maps, and I was like, well, how do I just go back? I want to go back to my Yelp listing, not be in Google Maps, and I couldn't figure it out. You know, or like in Dropbox, there's some goofy things too. Like, in Dropbox, or a lot of them, they have this sort of selector up at the top. Like, I can select my inbox, and it makes a pop-up that comes down, and I can select all my emails from there. I don't like the idea that it's a pop-up. Like, I want it to be sort of like a regular inbox where I see all my emails with, like, a small preview. You know, I just think the pop-up doesn't seem intuitive to me, and I think that's just kind of a, you know, depending on which platform you're used to. Like, if you're used to, I know some people with iPhones that. I think they would pick this up immediately. They, you know, would have no problem with it because they're sort of used to that. And I think, you know, I kind of have a pre-Android bias. But either way, it's been fun. I think too, also, I'm kind of excited. I might get a I love it. It has Bluetooth in it. Like, how cool is that? Like, a tablet with Bluetooth in it. So I think I might get, like, another Bluetooth keyboard and like a stand. And then, because I mean, if I could, like, the ZagMate, have you seen that?
ZagMate?
Yeah.
No.
So it's like, it's basically a case, like an aluminum case that snaps onto the front, but it has a Bluetooth keyboard and a stand built in. Like it, so I think it would make this basically like the coolest ultra portable, you know, 3/4 laptop.
That would be cool.
You know, so I might try that out. The tablet form factor is really cool, though. And again, this is, I mean, this hardware is just fantastic. Mad props to Apple for that. They do amazing stuff.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. Even the laptop I have is just awesome. Yeah. For the hardware wise, the OS I could do without, but
yeah. And there's only been a couple times. It's funny. Everyone sort of harps on Apple about the flash thing. The truth is, I haven't had a lot of occasions where I've noticed it and been sort of upset by it, but there are a couple big ones that I have, like Google Analytics, their graphs are in flash. So like the graphs don't show. I can see all the data, but the graphs don't show. And I just kind of like I want to see those.
Yeah.
But overall, super cool device. And also, guess what? You know, I'm a Nook guy. There's a Nook app. So I can read on it. Yeah, you know, one of the reasons I wanted this form factor, and it was kind of like I wanted an e-ink reader for books because I think that's the natural interface for it. But also like the idea of like an iPad for magazine type things, you know, full color magazines and stuff like that. So like flip book magazines, you know, cookbooks on the Nook that have color pictures and stuff. I'm totally pumped. I'm going to use this for it a ton.
Cool
device. Wow, that was my big awesome talk. Thank you to my coworkers for this iPad. It's so cool. I was floored. So let's move on to our web apps, which we have now. Our first web app is actually called YouFollow.com. And what's cool about this is YouFollow.com, it's kind of a way to find bloggers or blogging things. They kind of say that's a way to follow your favorite bloggers. So like when you go to the homepage, they have like sort of featured channels, like a food channel, venture capital, parenting. But then also they have featured authors. Like a lot of bloggers sort of blog in different places. Like, especially if you're in, you know, New York Times, like you might subscribe to one particular blog in New York Times, but that writer that you sort of followed it for might write in other segments and stuff. So here, like you can go and see, you know, like Paul Krugman, Brad Feld, Arianna Huffington, you know, you can click on that and sort of get a feed of like all their blog entries. It's kind of like a nice way to sort of scoop them all together into one spot. And then they also have sort of featured sources. For me, the big thing is I like the idea of following authors, because one thing I noticed, you know, when you and I were blogging pretty heavily for a while there, if you wanted to follow blogging by Jade Robbins, it was kind of difficult to do because there was jaderobbins.com. I had an author RSS feed on Montana Fragfest. And so I like this idea of being able to follow particular bloggers.
Yeah. Also, you have that same model with like Twitter where you, like, if I want to see who you're following, I can go and see, you know, who's cool or who you think is cool. But if you're new to blogging, like if you want to find a good blogger, where do you go? You can't Google, like, you know, venture capitalist bloggers, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You might get a couple of them, but
that's tough to do. Know. And there's a lot of these people have really sort of, you know, awesome, they just have clout just because they're not like big names that you can just like go and search for like top bloggers, and you're not going to see like usually all these people. Usually, you know, these people are just sort of expected that people know them because they're so awesome.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So check it out at YouFollow.com. Our next little web app is a quick one. It's pretty cool. It's called loads.in, and it's just a really cool, quick way to see how fast your particular web page loads in different places. So here we go. I'll put in jaderobbins.com. Whoops. Went in jaderobbins.com, hit start. And what it does is from various places around the world by default, it'll load up your web page and tell you how long they take to load. So this is funny, I think, when you're kind of just getting on the website, on the web, you don't think about it a lot, but big companies and stuff have to think about this a lot. Like, that's why, you know, Amazon has different data centers in different part of the country and different part of the United States, because you will have loading and performance impacts depending upon where you are. I mean, I think we kind of just assume that it's going to be all the same because, you know, it's like just because you're on the net. Once you're on the net, you're on the net. But when you start thinking about it, with this, you can check it out and see. And then after it loads the first time, you can kind of say like, hey, I want to see how fast it loads in Chicago in Firefox 3.66, you know, and you can do it from there. You can sort of break it down. Like I noticed my average load time across the globe was, you know, like 4 seconds. But my average load time from servers in Chicago was like 1.6.
Yeah, page load time is very important. Yahoo spent a lot of time developing techniques and stuff to make it look, even perceived page load can make a difference, you know, if the top of the page loads before the bottom even starts going. So it's important to do, and this is a really quick and easy way to check different, you know, like I want to say Western Europe, Ireland, you know, see how long it takes.
How is Rocket take it for granted. Doing? How is Rocket Ship doing in Western Ireland?
Well, let's do it here.
Yeah, but you know, it's nice that you can get an average and then you can break it down not only by place but by browser too. Like, because you know, you can see like on average your page loads more in this browser than, you know, in this browser. Like maybe if you're doing really heavy JavaScript stuff, this new sort of JavaScript engine wars might actually affect how your page loads in different ones.
And the fact that it says which browser you want to load it in, that tells me that they're actually loading up browsers and taking like screenshots or mm-hmm. something. Maybe even using like that Selenium script. So in Ireland, it actually loads pretty decent. About the more or less the same than USA Safari, but that was Safari 4 versus Chrome 8. Maybe that's go Internet Explorer 8. Very neat. I like how it shows little screenshots so you can actually see that it actually went out and did the deed.
Yeah, it's not just, you know, random number between 1 and 10.
Yeah, it's
and
not like a ping test or something.
Yeah, exactly. So check it out at loads.io. And hey, if you guys have some news, a follow-up geek tool or web app or topic you want us to talk about, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. You can shout us out on Twitter, send us an email. Love to hear from you guys. We really appreciate it. And before we talk about our topic, let's talk about our second sponsor, our very own Mark Sanborn's Rocket Ship It. Mark, what is Rocket Ship It?
Rocket Ship It is your complete shipping library for PHP and soon to be coming Ruby and other languages for doing anything regarding shipping, whether it's making labels, tracking, doing rates. You know, if you have an e-commerce site and you want to calculate how much it costs to add 3 widgets into the cart and check out to a certain zip code, we can help you do that.
How much do widgets weigh these days?
Widgets weigh 6.4 ounces. 6.4. Yeah, that's actually a funny problem because, you know, I can do the weight I can give you a good rate if you give me the weight and the zip code of where it's going and how many packages for that weight. The hard part is if you have a company where your customers end up placing a lot of things in the cart, it becomes an issue. Well, how many things does it take before I get to box number 2 and box number 3? So it becomes pretty interesting there. But yeah, anything regarding shipping, we can help you do. If you want to automate stuff, even, you know, is from just doing rates and tracking all the way up to if you want a full-blown RMA system where it automatically sends return labels via email to your customers so that they can send back parts or things, we can help you out.
You even broke it down. You can just get rates and tracking for all major carriers as one package, or you can get full integration with each individual carrier as much as you want. Pretty cool. Check it out by going to rocketship.it. All right, let's get into our topic, Mark. I'm really excited about this because I think, you know, I mean, I've seen this around and I really didn't put a whole lot of thought into it. It's the whole, you know, shebang thing, right?
Yeah, so what shebang? What are you talking about? Are you speaking
Ricky Martin?
Klingon?
Shebang.
Oh, dear. So, you know, what is the shebang? It's just the pound sign or hash symbol, if you know, and then the exclamation point. And if you may have noticed them in URLs lately, they've been kind of becoming popular in the major sites like Twitter and Facebook. Where the name comes back, I just included this just because it's kind of fun. It's, you know, contraction of sharp, bang, or so the in sharp or the SH in hash bang is where it comes from. It, you know, stems back from the old Unix days, you know, Perl scripts and, you know, the first line of a script.
Right. The first line is that shebang, and then you tell it which interpreter is running to run the script in, so that when you just execute that script, it knows like sort of, you know, what interpreter, like a lot of times you just see /bin bash because, you know, you're writing a bash script. You know, but like if you're doing PHP, you could do like, you know, /bin/PHP/PHP command. I don't know what it is for PHP or, you know, /bin/Ruby or whatever. You could, you know, that way this, you know, it's not the file extension or anything that tells it what is going to execute it. It's the very first line of the script.
Yep. So what does this have to do with web programming and what, and, you know, URLs?
It tells them, it tells them where to execute the script, right?
Well,
wrong.
So what a lot of developers were doing for a while was sticking, just using the hashtag. So like, let's say you have agiletask.me/tasks. And then on that page, if a user clicks on today, let's say you would go to the today hash, which traditionally had been like an anchor point in the text.
Right.
It would go fetch another page and maybe it would refresh and you'd see a different tab or something. Mm-hmm. If you're on Twitter and you're logged in and you click on like mentions or you click on a specific tweet and you want to view like the detailed conversation of that tweet, it will load more content on the same, but you're still on the same page.
Right.
You know, the web is stateless. Each time you click a link, you're onto a new page. And then once that page loads, typically your browser's not doing anything and you're not getting new content. Although that's now changing. We want to be more interactive as this, you know, web 2 or 3.0, whatever you want, you know, this new generation of the web, Twitter, Facebook, it's more like you're in an application, you know, like you're an iPad app or something. You log in and you see this page and you get to interact with it. And that's all nice. So what the problem is and why these hashbangs became popular is Google, you know, the crawlers are really good at reading HTML, but they can't really parse and do JavaScript very well.
Right.
They're not very visual creatures.
Yeah.
So this is why we have them. And so the current practice is developers make parallel universes. They have pages for users without JavaScript, when usually it's like, hey, you can't view this page. Please go get some JavaScript. Or it's like a dumbed down version. It doesn't really have much content. And then, you know, if a user does have JavaScript, then they have the full rich page, and that's called progressive enhancement. We've talked about that before. The problem with that, though, is what gets indexed by the Google crawlers and what, you know, is searchable is the page without JavaScript.
Right.
So, and you know, if you're somebody like Twitter and all your content is Ajax, you're going to be put at a pretty big disadvantage as far as search engine optimization and stuff goes. And Google, you know, in a perfect world, you wouldn't have to change anything. Google would just be able to crawl and everything just like a normal user would. But it's kind of hard. So they've made it a way for you to help them out and help yourself at the same time. So the new way is you need to adopt an Ajax crawling scheme. So for each URL that has a dynamically produced content, you know, like the Twitter tweet stream, mm-hmm. For example, your server provides an HTML snapshot, which is the content a user with, you know, if they had a browser, would see. You know, that snapshot is a snapshot in time, so it's not going to be dynamic at that moment when the bot sees it, but it'll be somewhat up-to-date content. It won't be totally stale or content that's just, you know, you need JavaScript to see this page.
Right.
There will be Ajax URLs for containing the hash fragment. So like if we had, so like faceoffshow.com/index.html, that hash key equals value, that's the URL that the user sees. But then there's also an uglier URL that the search engine sees when they go to that page, but they'll index it as that URL. So when the user is looking through the Google content on the in the search results, they'll see the decent URL.
Okay. Yeah.
And so when the search engine comes to your page, your server has to serve up. It has to detect that it's a Google bot and serve up the HTML snapshot that would contain the Ajax URLs for that key value, or you know that pair.
Right. Right.
So, you know, this is something that is going to take some time and some thought. You know, if you've already got a page, it's probably not super applicable to people that are just running static pages. or semi-dynamic ones. This is more for pages that are totally dynamic, like a Twitter or Facebook. But
right.
So how do we get these snapshots? There's a few tools you can use. You can use the HTML unit that will actually, it's a Java program that will run like a browser, but it can interpret JavaScript and then make like an HTML output that has the AJAX stuff injected into it.
Cool.
And then you can then serve that up to Google. There's also CrawlJax and Wattage.com can help. There's some free tools, open source tools that can help you do that. Another way you could do the snapshot is, if you're using a lot of PHP or Ruby to produce your content, like let's say like Stack Overflow or something, they've got a lot of backend stuff, but it's not super dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Click a link and it makes it loads, it's not doing as much AJAX, but most of it comes from the server side.
Right.
You can do it that way instead of doing, the headless browser mm-hmm. deal. Another way is you can just keep doing it the way you are. Although this isn't as good, you can have the static version of the page, which is stripped down, hopefully better than just, view this page with JavaScript.
Yeah.
Let's say your page, the front part of the page has a lot of dynamic content, but you don't use the hash bang or even hash on the front page because you want that nice clean, www.yourdomain.com.
Mm-hmm.
There's a meta tag that you can put in the head of your HTML, which is just meta name equals fragment content and then the exclamation mark.
Huh.
And that way, the Google bots crawlers come to your site, they will look for that ugly URL that contains the HTML snapshot that you would have made with those tools that we talked about. The other thing to note is, so for a while people, the AJAX, they would use that hash or that anchor
mm-hmm.
thing that was normally in HTML. Google added the exclamation part. That was a Google thing that they've added to distinguish their snapshot system that they've developed. However, other search engines have followed suit just because Google's, the main player here.
Yeah, Google's a man.
Things to note, if you're going to do this, if your site, like AgileTask has a lot of dynamic content, although most of it is private.
Yeah.
You log in and see your tasks. But, if you have a site that's, mostly dynamic and people don't really change URLs much, you might want to consider this, look into it. If you do make any changes, make sure you test it out with Fetch as Googlebot, for example. It's a tool that comes with the Google Webmaster Suite.
Yeah.
And it can crawl your site as an actual Googlebot and give you some reports and statistics. Some of the people that are doing this, we've already talked about Facebook, Twitter. I'm sure there's more. Also, if you go to Twitter and log in and go to your tweet stream, you can see it at the top right away. Some of the criticism people, it's kind of like HTML standards. Like it's Google's making up their own kind of thing. And some people don't think the exclamation marks should be in the URLs just for this purpose and some of this stuff. But
well, and it's kind of confusing too. I mean, it just used to be like, Twitter took care of it. Like you used to be able to go to twitter.com/JadeRobbins, but like now it's kind of like you log in, it's like twitter.com/JadeRobbins. And I was like, whoa, for a second I was like, are all my old links going to break now? Like what changed, and it doesn't really change, but it kind of did. And it was kind of confusing.
A lot of people think that this is kind of a kludge and only like Google engineers could have came up with this. Like they feel like it's over engineered and there's just way too much for a site to have to do in order to produce this.
Yeah.
And that's why some of the bigger sites are doing it, but you don't see a lot of the smaller ones doing it yet. Cause it does require some work. I mean, and like we kind of touched on, in a perfect world, Google would be able to crawl everything and not have to rely on you to provide snapshots. So there's some criticism there, but it seems like, some of the big players are doing it and Google's, obviously a big search engine. So I think it's here to stay, at least for now.
Yeah.
And so
check it out.
Check it out. All right. Well, that wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. I want to thank you guys for listening and remind you, you can subscribe to the show if you haven't done so yet, which would be ludicrous, by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. Lots of different ways to do that. You can also leave feedback for the show. If you have a suggestion or something you want us to talk about, by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Thank you for listening. We really do appreciate it. We will see you guys next week.